tonight, I talk to Kevin Roos, who invited hackers into his life for you. The Obamas will talk tech at South by Southwest, and I'll pay with Google, please. All that and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1461, recorded Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines personalized service, convenient packaging, and modern technology to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescription.
And by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered directly to your doorstep. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now.
And by Score Big, pay less for quality seats to your favorite sporting and music events. Go to scorebig.com, click on the microphone, and enter promo code TNT to save $20 off your first ticket purchase. Hello, and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the tech news with people who are infatuated.
They are in love.
In love with technology.
They've got little hearts in their eyes about technology.
True. I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. If only the TriCaster was capable of putting actual hearts in our eyes. Maybe next model. They're probably hard at work on that.
Maybe.
Introducing today, Lindsay Turrentine, welcoming back to the show from CNET. How's it going, Lindsay?
It's going great. It's been a really fun day here. We're going to talk about that in a little bit.
I know. You've got some pretty interesting stuff going on at CNET. And we will get to that. Mm-hmm. Oh, we will. But before that, we've got other things to talk about. So I guess let's start there. How about Google?
Let's talk about Google. I'm excited about this Google news.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Google is all in on payments. We already know this. To that end, it's testing a new pilot program in the San Francisco Bay Area, South Bay, actually, specifically, called Hands-Free. It uses Bluetooth low energy, Wi-Fi, and location services to kind of like triangulate the user's location where they happen to be. They walk into a store that supports hands-free. The cashier senses a user's card that's tied to the hands-free app in their phone. All the user has to say is they want to, quote, pay with Google, and then give the cashier their initials, and the transaction is done. No swiping, no blooping, no blippity-blopping with the phone. It just kind of happens. It can stay in your pocket. Is this the next evolution, and do we need this widespread?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I agree.
So into this. I've been thinking about this, like, all along. I've been thinking, okay, when I use Apple Pay, for instance, I often have to just, I get the phone out, I've got all that, but then I have to go ahead and enter my PIN.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense at all. Why can't I mean, I've been wondering this the whole time. Why can't I just walk up?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, even when I use my watch, it's kind of this awkward, like, I really like the idea. It's like a secret password, too, and you just walk up and say, I'll pay with Google, and magic. They'll also take your picture. I signed up for the app. It's an iOS an Android app. And I think you have to have a 4S or higher, which is great for those who, because if you have a 4S, I don't think you can use Apple Pay. I'm pretty sure.
Good point.
So, Android, I think 4.2 or higher. It's only in the South Bay now, but you can sign up and be ready and make sure that they have your payments and everything. And then you take a picture of yourself or you use a picture. They say that they might take a picture. The retail place might take a picture of you, but then they say they destroy it right away. I mean, they've got their privacy dialed in. Of course, Jason's taking his picture right now.
I'm waiting. Oh, I've got to turn it around. Okay, I got it. This is going to be remembered forever when I pay. Okay, there we go. I'm good.
You get $5 off your first purchase if you use it now. So if you're in the South Bay and you use it, let us know. Email us at tnt@twit.tv. See how it works. Because, I mean, everyone has had their experience with Apple Pay where, you know, you try to use it and it doesn't work. Or the person says, I don't have any idea what you're talking about. Or, you know, just doesn't work. So they're starting small, which is interesting.
Yeah,
It is interesting. Jason, is this going to work with your next bit? Is that a next bit, Robin?
It is the next bit, Robin. And I mean, there's no reason that it won't. It happily took my strange picture, my strange faced picture. Might change that later. But yeah, there's no reason that it shouldn't. And this isn't entirely new, actually. I remember probably 3-4 years ago, Square had, I think it was Payments by Square or Pay with Square, and it used geofencing. And actually, here in town, there's a coffee shop down the street that actually supported it. So Tom Merritt would regularly, he would go there with, you know, his phone just in his pocket, and based on geofencing alone, all he had to do was walk up to the register, say, I want that. It would figure things out and it would do it for you. And he swore by it. I never had a chance to actually use that. It really does seem like the way to do this, but you can't help but kind of fall back on, wow, that seems really easy to like take advantage of somehow. But I suppose if they're matching an image, that's a pretty good way to tell. It's really hard for me to walk into a place with your face on me, you know. And if that's happening,
so far,
we've got bigger problems than just fraud. So there we go.
Yeah, I think it's interesting and I am looking forward to it. So if anyone's used it, let us know.
Do, please, let us know.
Well, moving on, the U.S. Department of Defense announced a new Defense Innovation Advisory Board today, headed by Alphabet's Executive Chairman Eric Schmidt. Interesting move, considering Apple's ongoing tussle with the FBI. Google, of course, has lots of ties to the defense industry. Let us not forget that Boston Dynamics super robot dog we showed yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I never forget, actually. it attacks me in my dreams.
That robot dog has been attacking people in their dreams for years now. How many years have we been like flashing that thing up on the screen to be like,
big dog,
scary.
Go away.
Yeah.
So is anyone else just kind of like, I don't know, kind of a little weirded out by Eric Schmidt? In general. He said a lot of weird things about privacy. You know what I mean? Privacy and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. He's got a history of rubbing the people the wrong way. And, oh, by the way, he works for arguably the largest company that, you know, has interest in big data. Government has interest in big data. This just seems like a convergence that is, I don't know where this leads. I don't know where it leads.
I'm almost relieved, maybe this is naive, but that the government may have more access to what Google is doing. Like,
true. Explain
I feel
yourself.
Like Google's so big, it needs a little policing.
Okay.
And maybe if it's, I'm the eternal optimist, but maybe if there's a pragmatic alliance, we can get a little bit more of a system of checks and balances on what goes on there.
Okay.
He's already involved. I mean, he's on the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. And he's not going to be the only one. There'll be 12 other individuals who have successfully led large private and public organizations. No one else has been assigned yet.
I wonder. I'm totally like playing the devil's advocate here, but many others from large corporations coming in, like, that just seems like great. The government then has access to all of these really key people in these, you know, in these industries that happen to serve them very well, maybe for this, but also for many other things like down the line. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Sure, but most of these big industries are actually, or, you know, Google and obviously Apple at this point have been extremely vocal about privacy.
Very,
so maybe,
very much so.
Maybe that's, you know, we can
learn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Okay. I guess I'll accept that.
I had no idea you felt that way about Eric Schmidt. Changes everything.
he's said a lot of weird, creepy things over time. So it's hard for me to ignore. I think we actually had a segment on this show in an earlier incarnation that was called The Schmidt My CEO Says. It was all dedicated to the things that he said. So, I mean,
why did that go away? I mean,
we need to bring it back, apparently. moving on, the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences is expanding and creating categories, new categories, to allow online creators a chance at an Emmy Award for short series. YouTube Red, Crackle, Adult Swim, and a whole lot more. I'm sure there are plenty of them out there, are going to be part of the new short form categories. They're going to have awards for best acting in original series, best acting in comedy drama, best original series, reality, or nonfiction. I imagine Scare PewDiePie would probably fall into that last category. I'm pretty positive it would not win anything. So I don't know. What do you think? I think it's about time. I think this should absolutely be considered because there's content. I don't know. There's great content on all platforms.
Mm-hmm. So what's interesting about this to me is that it's sort of this piece on Polygon kind of suggests that this is so that we can include online content, basically, right? Like streaming content. But my question is this really just so that we can do that? Is there a differentiation anymore between streaming content and television content?
That's a really good point.
How long is this going to be kind of like for web stuff? Mm-hmm. Or is it going to end up within, and it's fine if it does, right? But in a few years, this is all just different forms of content that are out there, period.
Yeah, well, I mean, and, you know, we recently saw them open up to services like Netflix mm-hmm. and Hulu. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's been really good for those services because they have swept up. They've done really well in comparison with the other, let's say, traditional, you know, methods of creating this content on networks and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you might be right. We might be 5 years down the line and the blurring of lines seems kind of ridiculous maybe at that point because the quality of content and, you know, the things that are going up against each other in both categories actually seem very similar.
Sure. And when, you know, right now it's just sort of short form versus long form, which is probably already always persists to a certain degree. But when you kind of think about it, the lengths of shows is sort of artificial. And once everything is streaming, I mean, the 30-minute show versus the 60-minute show, shows will just be as long as they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it'll get really interesting. What's short form?
Right.
What's long form? What just is that just sort of like, I don't know, do we pick something arbitrary like 20 minutes or
short form,
50 minutes?
Short form is a show that just kind of feels short, you know? Just feels short.
Right. Well, I don't have a ton of time to consume content, so I would like a 2-minute show and then I can binge watch it. So like I'll do
so
it
you,
for
so
like
you could say you watched the
minutes.
Entire series.
Yeah. Like
micro
I stayed
form.
Up, yeah, yes, exactly. I stayed up till 9:30 binge watching this 30-second show.
I think you can do. Can't you do that on like Snapchat now?
Yes.
I mean, so
or Instagram,
there you go, or
right.
Instagram, yeah. Or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you have options.
Yeah, I think exactly right. The platform doesn't matter. So
yeah.
All right, moving on. Welcome home, astronaut Scott Kelly. Kelly landed safely on solid ground last night after spending 340 days on the International Space Station. That was just a little bit under a year. That's around 11 months. There he watched Matt Damon in the movie The Martian. He
Matt
ate
Damon.
Space lettuce. And he exposed his body to 11 months of microgravity for science. NASA will be studying Scott Kelly along with his astronaut, genetically identical twin brother, Mark Kelly, to discover how extended time in space affects us. I love
this. Here's what I want to know. I want to know when you're going to be able to buy space lettuce at the Smithsonian.
Good question. Really important question.
That's true. I want some of that.
Also, I love that he is a twin, right? What a great... Yeah. What a great story. What a great thing for science.
Yeah.
To be able to compare and contrast him with his twin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I loved, he was prolific on social media for all the time he was there. It was great to see him because what else are you going to do in space besides tweet? I think we're showing like he had like a 1,000 pictures that he tweeted. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, man. His Twitter feed is super impressive. And you just scroll through it. Well, what I realized scrolling through it is like any picture taken in space is a good picture. Right. Like here on Earth, we take pictures. Some of them turn out not so great. I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter what camera you have. If you're in space, you're going to take a pretty great picture. National Geographic actually has a link to what they say is 15 of the most amazing photos from his time there. It's really worth checking out because the closest I'm probably going to get to this anytime soon, unfortunately, is virtual reality. Mm-hmm. But I would I can't even imagine what it would be like to be up there. A, for that long, and for this to just kind of be normal over that amount of time. You wake up every morning and just be like, another astral view of things that no one else is probably going to see in their lifetime. Pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So jealous. So jealous.
So, Lindsay, tell me.
Yes.
CNET has dabbled in a lot of different things over the years. I know. I used to work there. Aside from all the tech news and product reviews that the site is known for, CNET began CNET Magazine a few years back. That seems to be doing well. And then there's this, which I don't know. You go ahead and tell me if this is the first for CNET. You published an original fiction, a piece of fiction to the site called The Last Taco Truck in Silicon Valley. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the story's about, who wrote it, all that kind of stuff?
Sure. Yeah. So, yes, this is the first time we've published original fiction. And this isn't just any original fiction, right? This is the first in a set of these. We're going to be doing this every month. This is by Michelle Richmond, and she has set four novels in San Francisco. She's a New York Times bestselling author. So this is not just like somebody who thought they had an interesting story to tell. Not that there would be anything wrong with that, but she's an extremely accomplished author. She wrote Golden State and The Year of Fog. She wrote this great piece for us. Like you said, it's called The Last Taco Truck in Silicon Valley. And without giving too much away, without too many spoilers, it's a pretty easy read. It's a quick read. You can read it over coffee. You can read it at lunch. But this is a very funny little send-up of sort of the way marketing works in Silicon Valley. It's got a lot of technology nods, a lot of nods to what goes on in the valley and what goes on in workplaces in the valley, and also the really, really important role of tacos.
Exactly. Well, yeah, before I knew it was fiction, and I thought, well, The Last Taco Truck, I got to get there.
Seriously? I mean, tacos, it's come to right? that?
Basically, we all had tacos for lunch today, and it wasn't even planned. We were like, all I can think about is tacos.
I can imagine.
So yeah. Can writers submit stories for future publication?
No. We are being no. The answer is no. We are being extremely selective here. We're going for people you're really going to recognize and authors you're going to know. I mean, that doesn't mean that we will never, ever in the future accept submissions, but we're already working on a number of these for the future. And it's really exciting.
So what, where did this come from? Like, I guess I'm not used to seeing, technology, let's say news, product review sites getting into the world of fiction. This seems like a very different direction for CNET. Why is CNET getting into this?
Well, okay. So, since the beginning of tech publishing generally, we've all sat around tables and said like, tech is part of your lifestyle. But, 10 years ago, tech was kind of part of most people's lifestyle. Tech was like a huge part of a lifestyle for fans and for people who self-identified as, those of us who are interested in technology and live this life, but not necessarily for everybody. Now, I think we're in an era where technology really is part of the fabric of every single person's life. And because of that, fiction rarely exists without mentioning technology. So we kind of felt like, okay, here we are. We're this premier publisher in the technology space. Let's just put our arms all the way around this and say technology is important in fiction too.
So,
and this is a great way to have a conversation about it.
I read a lot of fiction. I still read. And a lot of fiction doesn't get technology right. Like they get it. Yeah. They get it wrong. Is that something that you're looking for, that it has to be accurate?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it has to get it right in both sort of a cultural and a technical sense, right? We're never going to, we don't want to publish something that gets it wrong, that has, technology details wrong. That would be incredibly embarrassing. We wouldn't want to do that. But also we want it to be authentic. Want it to feel like it really is going to help illustrate the way in which technology affects people's lives, or how it's threaded into our lives, or it's going to get people thinking about the ways in which technology affects their lives. And so that's the spirit in which we're publishing these stories. And it's really exciting.
Of course, Jason Heiner, Tech Republic, recently did, for the past year, did Follow the Geeks book. We've had him on the show to talk about it and everything. And the plan there was, do everything online, and then eventually, hey, what do you know? We have a physical, tangible book, which is the way most people are used to getting, reading material like this. I could kind of see that working for you guys, too. If you've got a series of things, you're releasing them online. Any plans for kind of printing it out at some point?
Nothing yet. It's not, right now the plans are to publish these online.
Yeah.
I will not make any promises about the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I like to read short things online, but when I'm sitting down to a novel, it's still, I still like the paper.
Yeah. So yep. It could be a good anthology. That's what I'm saying.
This is really not that, it's not, it's a very short story.
Mm-hmm.
You it's going to be a quick read. You can read this in 10 minutes.
5,500 words. Depending on how fast you read. So can you tell us some of the other writers that are going to be coming out?
I can't yet. We will announce this in the future, but we've got them lined up for the next few months. So you'll hear about them and you know, have me back. We'll talk about them then.
All excellent.
Right. Awesome stuff.
All right. Well, after the break, you will never believe who is giving the keynote at this year's South by Southwest Interactive Festival. Hint, it is not me. But first, let's take a minute to thank PillPack, the sponsor of this episode. Now, who longs for the old-timey pharmacy, the one with the old couple who's known you and your parents and your grandparents and their grandparents for decades and decades and more decades? You know, like the one in It's a Wonderful Life? Well, if you have gotten prescriptions filled lately, you know that that ideal pharmacy is long gone. Now it's full of bright lights, strangers, long lines, and germs. Lots and lots of germs. But PillPack is the future. It's a full-service pharmacy that takes care of everything for you. They pre-sort and deliver your medications and vitamins in easy-to-tear packets labeled with the date and time for each dose, so you no longer need that antiquated Monday-to-Sunday pill box. They do this using robots and digital imaging technology along with pharmacist oversight to ensure the accuracy of every pill pack. Their pharmacists are available 24/7 from the privacy of your own home, which is hopefully not full of germs. So you no longer need to have those awkward pharmacy encounters. And they proactively call your doctor for you to manage all your refills so you will never run out. No extra costs beyond your standard copays. Shipping is always free. It's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure that your insurance is compatible before they transfer any of your medications over. There's also a PillPack medication reminder app for the iPhone and your Apple Watch. PillPack is medication simplified. You won't believe how much easier and more convenient it is until you've tried it. Here's what you can do. Visit pillpack.com/twit to sign up now. Their site is beautiful. It only takes 5 minutes to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/TWIT.
Boom. All right. Joining us now is Omar Gayaga from the Austin American Statesman to talk a little bit about South by Southwest. How's it going, Omar?
Hey, y'all. How you doing?
It's great to have you back. We're doing good. So you are no stranger to South by Southwest. You've been attending since the late 90s. Of course, you live in Austin, so that makes it probably a little bit easier to do.
a little more convenient, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. The festival has transformed a ton over the years, 2016 being its 30th year now. Is this the first year that both the President of the United States and the First Lady are delivering not only one keynote, but two separate keynotes at the event?
Yeah, this is historic for the festival. The closest we've gotten to the First Lady and the President is Al Gore spoke twice, I believe. Chelsea Clinton did a keynote, I think, about 2 years ago. We've had a lot of senators. We've had Al Franken and Paul, I believe, Rand Paul. But yeah, this is the first sitting president in the festival's history. And this is the 30th year of South by Southwest, the 23rd year of Interactive. So yeah, it's a huge deal for the festival.
I almost think that Obama is like taking this tour of cool, like on his, you know, he has no more, you know, like, gonna, he's like, I'll do, you know, Mark Maron's podcast. I'll, you know, I'll do this show and then, you know, I'll do Bill Simmons in South by Southwest. Is that what it feels like?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it definitely is kind of the cool kids festival.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's kind of the coolest festival. Somebody's excited.
And but yeah, this is a big deal for the festival in that he was already going to be in town for a Democratic fundraiser that night, that Friday, March 11th.
Yeah, it was really fun. I loved it.
Okay, sweetie.
My daddy's very sweet.
Cheryl just hijacked your show.
Hey, how's it going? That's okay. We all have kids, so we get it.
So, yeah, but it's a pretty big get for the festival. And, you know, we knew he was going to be in town. There was speculation. It's the first day of Interactive. What's going to happen? So, yeah, we're all pretty excited. Traffic is going to be a meltdown, but I'm otherwise sure. We're excited.
So two different keynotes. Do we know the subjects of these two keynotes yet? And are they in the same part of the festival or different parts of the festival?
No, they're actually completely separate. The first one's going to be the first day of South by Southwest Interactive, and that's going to be focused on entrepreneurship, on sort of the themes that Obama always talks about with technology, whereas, you know, kind of getting the country going and innovation. The First Lady will be speaking on Wednesday the 16th as part of South by Southwest Music, and that's going to be a whole separate presentation. She's going to be focused on a organization devoted to keeping girls in school around the world, and that will be part of music.
Sorry. All right, so possibly not as big a deal as having the POTUS at your event is Samsung planning a pop-up store for folks to see and play around with the Galaxy S7 and the Edge devices. Now, TWiT was there at South by Southwest in 2011 when the iPad 2 went on sale. I actually helped cover the long, long lines leading into that pop-up store
we'll
for Apple.
We'll talk about that Apple pop-up store. It was a huge deal.
It was a big deal. It was the buzz of the day, definitely. And everybody was buying them while we were there. So it was super successful. Do you think this is going to get that kind of level of anticipation at the event?
Probably not, because that sort of stuff is passe now at the festival. People, you know, you see a lot of those kind of pop-up stores and, you know, Samsung. You know, not quite the same cachet as having Apple just show up in the middle of Sixth Street, you know, with a big pop-up store. Mm-hmm. And also, Samsung has been doing some version of this for the last couple of years. They usually do some sort of storefront where they do concerts or they do something where you bring your Galaxy phone and you get into certain events. So they've been a big festival presence for the last couple of years. What's surprising, the thing they're doing for the first time this year is just selling actual phones at the festival. And March 11th is the launch date for all the Galaxy stuff. They'll be doing the Gear VR demonstrations. They'll be showing off the new VR camera they've got. So that's the new part of it, is that, you know, you buy a phone at the festival and it will get you access to certain, what they're calling like a festival premiere pass, that will get you into certain concerts and events at the festival.
Yeah, I suppose that's a nice bonus. Mm-hmm. Samsung's going all in this year, it seems like, with their promotion and their marketing for the new devices. And by the
way, when I heard March 11th, like, I perked up. I was like, wait, March 11th? That's South by Southwest date.
I'm pretty sure if you go into that store, you're probably going to see some VR stuff. That's a big theme in tech, just kind of the emergence of augmented and virtual reality options. And you wrote on Monday that AR and VR are going to have a big presence at the event just in general. South by Southwest has a track called AR VR Austin. I don't know. What are you most looking forward to seeing in regards to all that virtual stuff?
I mean, everyone wants to get their hands on Oculus. Everyone wants to get their hands on the HTC Vive. Vive. I still don't know how to pronounce that one.
I think it's fine.
But I've tried both. They're great. I mean, everyone wants to just see what new stuff people are doing with it. So not only just getting your hands on the hardware and trying it for yourself, which a lot of people still haven't, but seeing what software developers and game developers are doing. And we're seeing, you know, we're anticipating there's going to be a lot of new demos. We haven't heard what Microsoft is doing yet, but a lot of people are interested in HoloLens and whether that's going to be at the festival. There will be a 3-day VR AR track that starts on the 16th to the 18th, which is actually after Interactive and before South by Southwest Gaming, which is the next weekend. They've kind of split Interactive and gaming into two separate events. So yeah, there's going to be, I think, something like over 200 panels that have some sort of connection to VR at the Interactive itself. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of talk about VR and AR at South by this year.
Do you think there's going to be anything that helps translate what the VR AR experience is like for regular people? Because this is always the big challenge when you're talking about virtual reality and augmented reality, is sort of how do people who haven't put on a headset understand what it is that you're getting? Do you feel like there's some activity that's going to help enlighten audiences about the realities of virtual reality?
I mean, certainly companies like Samsung are going to be setting up big demo spaces at their lounge with with the Gear VR. The thing is, I mean, that seems to be like the ground level consumer version of what VR is going to be. And I don't know if you all have tried it, but Gear VR just, I mean, it's fine for animation. It's fine for certain simple things. It doesn't really give you that same sensory experience as Oculus or the Vive, where you really feel like you're completely surrounded. At the end of the day, the Gear VR is still a phone in front of your face, the same as like cardboard, whereas Oculus and the Vive are much more fully powered. So there's a disconnect there between what consumers can buy for like $100 or get in the mail with cardboard versus the $600 and up full VR headsets. I think that is going to be a lot harder to get in front of consumers just because there's a lot more hardware overhead. And it's not as easy to just strap it onto someone, you know, and without a computer nearby.
Are there any other panels that we haven't talked about that you're excited about?
There's a lot of featured speakers. I mean, the one that I'm really interested in is Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox is going to be here to talk about autonomous cars and the future of smart cities. I think that's kind of an under-the-radar panel that people aren't talking about because it's not a celebrity, but still really a fascinating topic. NPR just did a big profile on him. I think he's fascinating. I think he's got a lot of great ideas about where transportation is going, obviously, as a transportation secretary. But that's one I really want to go to. There's some great keynotes. The CEO of Under Armour, the Andy Puddicombe from Headspace, which a lot of people are interested in. Brene Brown, author, and a lot of celebrity stuff. There's like Kerry Washington, the women from Broad City are doing a convergence panel. A lot of celebrity spotting if you're into that. And a big Mr. Robot 10-story high Ferris wheel Coney Island installation is going to be downtown. So nice, if you're a fan of Mr. Robot, that will be a pretty sweet place to be.
That's great. Well, Omar, thank you so much, both to you and... and your other family members. Thank you for joining us so much today. It's always a pleasure getting you on. Tell people where they can follow your work online.
Yeah, my blog is at austin360.com/digitalsavant, and all of our South by Southwest coverage is going to be going on next week at austin360.com. So follow us there and Omar G on Twitter.
Excellent.
Thanks, Omar.
Thank you, Omar. We'll have you back soon, both of you.
Thanks so much.
See you later. And Lindsay, we know that you have to kind of take out. This is probably the time that we have to do that. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting about some of these stories with us. It's always a pleasure.
So fun. I love being here. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Yep. We'll have you back. Last chance to kind of promote whatever you want. Go for it.
Oh, go read Technically Literate. Read The Last Taco Truck, Silicon Valley. It's a fun read. Come to CNET. Check it out. It's all over the site. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Hope to see you there.
Thank you, Lindsay. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Now's the time in the show where we hear from you. Michael from Montreal writes, I have shut down all my social accounts since I'm not what you would call social. Therefore, I can only use email to send you this. Here is how I am set up to watch TNT and all other high quality podcasts in my dedicated home theater, 12 by 18 feet. Now, if you're watching the video version, you can see the details of Michael's setup. He hasn't numbered out. If you're watching the audio, if you're listening, all I can say is that it is awesome.
Yeah, wow, that's quite the component setup there.
Mm-hmm. You don't need to be social if you have that.
No.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, or you can email it to tnt@twit.tv, and we are going to find it.
All right, coming up, what happens when you challenge hackers to try to hack you? I can imagine not a whole lot of good stuff happens. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode, NatureBox. NatureBox with snacks like dark cocoa nom noms. I remember these from the other day. I could hardly stop eating them. It's dangerous for me to hold them right now because they're that delicious. We know the workplace can be a danger zone of unhealthy options. Try to resist Bagel Friday, birthday cupcakes, all that stuff. It can be a real challenge if there aren't healthy alternatives available to you. Well, NatureBox has a snack for that. You can eat better, you can feel better with flavorful snacks that are made from ingredients that you can trust. NatureBox has over 100 incredibly delicious snacks that are sourced from all over the world. They have vegan options, no sugar added, non-GMO options, and you can choose between savory, sweet, salty, tart flavors, whatever floats your boat. You got them here at NatureBox. Some of my personal favorites, mini Belgian waffles, of course. In fact, it's another, you know, danger zone here. I have a bag of them, so I might not make it to the end of the show without eating them. I'll do my best. Jalapeno cashews are awesome. Just seriously, go to the site, pick out all the things you like, and create your profile. Super easy to fill out your snack profile. You get personalized recommendations based on your preferences. Plus, they're constantly adding new and interesting snacks for you to discover. NatureBox believes you shouldn't eat something you don't like. So if you try a snack that you don't like, they'll replace it in your next box for free. You can't do that with other snacks. Go to naturebox.com/TWIT right now, and you'll get 50% off your first box of delicious and unique snacks without any of the junk. That's naturebox.com/twit for 50% off your first box of the best tasting snacks in the world. And we thank NatureBox for their support of Tech News Today.
The last time we spoke to our next guest, he was in the home of a revenge porn mogul trying to convince him of the error of his ways. Now he's at it again, this time inviting a group of elite hackers into his life to find out how easy it was to infiltrate it. Turns out that for Kevin, like many of us, it wasn't that difficult. Welcome, Kevin Roos of Fusion.
Thank you for having me.
So why did you do this?
Well, I'm a glutton for punishment. I always like to put myself in the middle of my stories. And I had reported on a lot of big hacks of major companies like Sony Pictures and JP Morgan. And I had heard about this thing that companies do called penetration testing or pen testing, where they invite hackers in, white hat hackers, to hack their systems and help them figure out what the vulnerabilities are and where they might, you know, have security flaws and how hackers who are malicious and want to do damage might find their way into their systems. And this is a big industry. I mean, there are pen testers who charge tens of thousands of dollars an hour. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe I should have one of these. Like, maybe there's a personal pen test that I could do because I'm pretty privacy conscious and I want to keep my information secure. And so what if I invited hackers to do the same thing to me that, you know, Fortune 500 companies are getting done to them? So I had two hackers, this guy Chris Hadnagy and this guy Dan Tentler, sort of spend 2 weeks hacking me using all of the tools at their disposal because I wanted to see how far they could get. And at the end of it, I just made them promise that they wouldn't steal any money or do anything irreparably damaging to me. And then I wanted them to help me fix my problems and make myself more secure.
So that was going to be my later question. You made them promise. Like, are you a little bit scared now that they have all this information that they're not going to keep their promise?
Well, I think these are both pretty ethical guys. I mean, they both have a pretty long track record of being good sort of white hat hackers. But yeah, that was absolutely a worry. I had never met either Chris or Dan before. I had only heard about them, you know, sort of by reputation. And they really could have done a ton of damage. I mean, In hindsight, I kind of don't know what I was thinking by doing this.
So what did you find were your biggest vulnerable spots?
Well, one thing that was interesting is that Chris did what's called social engineering on me. So social engineering is sort of like hacking a network by exploiting human vulnerabilities rather than like vulnerabilities in code or sort of infosec. So he actually had one of his hackers call my phone company, my cell phone company, pretending to be my wife. I don't have a wife. I'm not married. But they pretended to be my wife. And they said, you know, we need access to Kevin's account. We need to make some changes. You know, she actually did this in a really amazing and convincing way, using a YouTube video with some sound effects of a baby crying in the background, sort of to make the customer service rep more sympathetic. And so, you know, in a matter of minutes, like she had convinced this cell phone, you know, service rep to let her into my account and let her make changes to my account and let her change my password. So it was really an amazing example of how you can hack someone even without hacking them directly by focusing on the companies and the organizations that give them services.
Yeah, I definitely recommend watching the whole video. It was amazing to watch this. This woman was a hacker, or was she also an actress?
No, she's just a hacker. I mean, she's very good at it. I mean, it requires a little bit of acting skills. But I think that's sort of the point is that, you know, no matter how secure I am, no matter how many, you know, layers of encryption I use, no matter how strong my passwords are, if the data providers that I rely on aren't safeguarding my information against social engineering tactics like this, it doesn't matter what I do because I'm still vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the information that she was able to get from this customer service rep. I'm totally going to use a YouTube video of a baby crying next time I call Comcast or anyone just to get what I need because it's, you know, I think that they were going to give her anything just to make the baby stop crying. What about the more hardcore hacking that was done that didn't involve just, you know, people convincing someone on the phone?
So this was a guy named Dan Tentler, who's a pretty well-known sort of white hat hacker. And he actually does sort of skilled technical hacking. And so he started off his hack by phishing me. He posed as Squarespace and got me to install a certificate on my machine that I thought was coming from Squarespace, but it was actually malware that he had written that gave him access to essentially my entire machine. He set up what's called a shell that let him run commands remotely on my laptop. And so he was then able to steal all my passwords and install a keylogger and set up a script that took pictures of me out of my own webcam every 2 minutes and uploaded them to a remote server. So he was like able to spy on me, get any information I had, steal all my bank account information, all my credit card information. I mean, he really like, this was the sort of scorched earth hack to end all hacks.
So when you got the email from Squarespace, I mean, this was after you had already hired them to hack you. Did you think maybe this was the, or did you really just say, oh, okay, this looks legit, I'm going to answer it?
I mean, it was very convincing. Maybe I should have been more skeptical. I know, you know, certainly now looking back on it, like I'm sort of astounded that this worked. But I think, you know, at the time it felt like this came from, and he had registered a domain, he had set up a custom site, like it all looked pretty believable. And I'm like a fairly skeptical guy. I don't, you know, respond to Nigerian princes asking for money on, you know, in my email. But yeah, I mean, he's very good at his job. And so I think, you know, what we've learned is that sort of even people who are sophisticated around security can fall for these phishing scams. I mean, a Snapchat executive just fell for a phishing scam the other day and compromised a bunch of employee data that way. So it's not just like grandmas that are falling for these things.
So do you ever look at like the whole FBI Apple debate about encryption and think like, who cares? Like, we're all vulnerable all the time anyway. If someone really wants our stuff, they'll get it no matter how secure our enclave is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the big lessons of this experiment for me, was that if someone has the time and the resources and the will to do damage and the skill, it's very, very hard to stop every possible vector of attack. So if someone like Dan Tentler decides he wants to ruin your life and he's going to dedicate, you know, a month and thousands of dollars worth of, you know, equipment and energy and time to it, there's very little you can do to stop it. The bigger risk, and the thing I think is happening with the Apple debate, is more like, you know, locking the doors of your car. Like, it's a pretty common sense thing, and it's going to deter, you know, 90% of possible thieves. It won't keep everyone out, but you're much safer locking your car than you are not locking your car. And so that's how I sort of think about privacy now and security, is what can I do that is going to deter the sort of average hacker and make them move on to a harder target, rather than like, how can I bulletproof myself entirely?
So what can we do?
Well, one of the things you mentioned is using a password manager. Obviously, like for most people, that's a pretty easy step. And I also have gotten recommendations to use VPNs whenever you're on a public Wi-Fi network. I use one called VPN Unlimited. I think it's like $5 a month. And it lets me sort of like, you know, secure my connection when I'm on Starbucks Wi-Fi or something like that. There's also sort of, you know, common sense things, not clicking on strange links in emails. You can hover over a link in an email to make sure it actually leads to the address, the URL of the site you want to visit. There are other sort of like, one program that Dan Tentler recommended is called Little Snitch, which is sort of an outgoing, it monitors your outgoing traffic to see if your computer is trying to connect to any strange servers, any applications are trying to send your data elsewhere. It sort of monitors your network and allows you to stop that. So there are all these little tools. And then I think just the basic sort of like, you know, 101 security 101 tips still apply. But that's really like what most of us can do pretty easily. Obviously, if you're Edward Snowden, you'd want to like take additional precautions. But I think that was the other lesson, is that most of us are not Edward Snowden. Most of us aren't sort of interesting or high profile enough for people to want to hack. And it's what's called like privacy through obscurity.
Right. And what about the post-it note over the camera? Do you do that on your laptop now?
I do. As you can see, I'm not doing it right now. This is still photographing me. But after this interview, I will we'll tape up my computer again.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much. I appreciate your vulnerability about being so vulnerable, and all of us are, but not all the time. You can watch the video on Fusion at Real Future TV. You can watch all of Kevin's videos and all of Real Future TV's videos. This is part 8 in the series, I think.
Yes.
And so what are some of the other, I know we interviewed about you, about the revenge porn mogul who changed his tune after you talked to him. What are some of your other videos that you've done on this series?
Well, today we've got one coming about cryonics, which is this very sort of wacky futurist movement that thinks that we should freeze people in liquid nitrogen after they die and then bring them back with futuristic medical technologies. We've got stuff on biohacking. We've got stuff on drone racing. So they're all up. You can see them all at realfuture.tv.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you.
Take care. After the break, we have already told you about self-driving chairs, but what if you could buy a chair that harnesses all of your anxiety and uses it to charge your phone? But first, let's take a minute to thank Score Big, the sponsor of this episode. Now, have you ever been on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat and you've seen people bragging about the great event they just went to, a basketball game or a concert or comedy show, a big arena to watch cars run over each other?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. You can stew in your own jealousy, or you can get tickets to the next big event and then take to social media to make other people jealous. That's how you do it. Just go to scorebig.com where you can find the tickets you're looking for at prices you want to pay without all those fees. You know, the fees I'm talking about, the ones that don't show up until the very end of the shopping cart experience when you've already have your credit card out. Now, 40% of all live event tickets go unsold. ScoreBig is making it easy to attend live events by working directly with your favorite teams and artists to get their unsold seats at unpublished prices. At scorebig.com, you're always guaranteed huge savings by paying much less than what the box office charges for tickets. They have incredible deals on tickets to concerts and sports games, Broadway productions, and family-friendly events. To take advantage of these amazing deals, visit scorebig.com and find the event and the seats that you want. Now, if you've ever missed a show that's come through town, that can be devastating. ScoreBig can help with that too. Scroll through events in your area and then just tap the heart icon to favorite shows and events to be notified on upcoming dates. This is super useful. So quit overpaying for tickets. Get the tickets you want at prices you can afford with ScoreBig. The next time you're planning to attend a game or a show, visit ScoreBig first and see how much you can save. Go to scorebig.com, click on the microphone, and enter the promo code TNT to save an extra $20 off your first ticket purchase. That's scorebig.com, promo code TNT.
All right, Megan. Are you a fidgeter? You fidget?
No, but I am a fidgeter, and you know that, and you are also a fidgeter.
Am I? I mean, I am right now for effect.
Sometimes you fidget a lot in the show. It can be distracting, I have to say.
Okay, well, I'll have to rein that in, or maybe not. Do you also lack an open power plug near your desk that you can plug your phone into to keep it charged throughout the day?
Sometimes I do.
You do? I would say at my desktop computer, I do not. I always have a power plug there. Like most people, we're surrounded by a wealth of power supply options for charging our devices while we sit there browsing the internet. But if both of those things do apply to you, sometimes for you here, Megan, then I guess maybe you need the Move chair. Maybe. It's a chair that harnesses your fidgeting power, basically your kinetic energy caused by your anxietal movements, essentially. fidgeting back and forth. And all the while, you're charging your phone. I don't know. At first, I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. But then I was like, but we're sitting at a desk. Why wouldn't we have a power plug there?
That's a good point. That is a really good point. What if you're in a conference room? Then you might not have a power plug.
That's not a bad idea. Or you're in an auditorium. You're like at a... Let's say you're at CES sitting in the auditorium and their chairs instead of, you know, plugging into power strips.
I think this is ideal for classrooms.
I'm trying.
I mean, in Petaluma, they have chairs that let kids fidget, which is really important to learning and moving around. And I don't know if you have ever been on one, but they're, you know, there's little balls or things that you can sit on. And I mean, that's what Leo does. Think about if you could harness the power of Leo fidgeting. That would be amazing. I love it. And I also love this story because I learned what piezoelectricity is.
Piezoelectricity.
It's the electric charge that accumulates in certain solid materials such as crystals, certain ceramics, and biological matter such as bone DNA and various proteins, according to Wikipedia. in response to applied mechanical stress. So that's how this works.
Mm-hmm.
Piezoelectric
This
crystals.
Actually kind of reminds me, Liz Romero worked here, you know, a few years back. And one of the main things that she would have the exercise ball and she would bounce on it constantly. And it was on top of a pad that actually, if I remember correctly, it was something similar to this, like the movement of her bouncing on the chair. And I can't remember if a fan of the network created it or what it was exactly, but it created the kinetic energy actually created charge. And it was kind of it would count how many times she bounced on the ball because she bounced all day. So kind of similar thing. So I guess, you know, there's movement there to be captured. Mm-hmm. Why not put it to some good use?
Yeah.
And maybe not. Maybe it doesn't need to be isolated to just charging your phone.
No, it could power the world.
It could power the world.
It really could.
Or maybe not.
Well, tomorrow you're leaving me alone, but we will still get to see you.
Yeah,
but you won't be in that chair.
Yeah. So tomorrow's guest is going to be Natalie Morris and Father Robert Ballesere, who will be in studio. Father Robert will. Natalie will be on Skype. I'm going to be out covering the Launch Festival in San Francisco for TWIT. So I'm going to be there all day. Jason Calacanis is going to be there. I'm going to talk to him. I'm going to talk to the Hyperloop people. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm just going to take a look at all the really cool things at lunch. It's all kind of about startups and stuff and new interesting things that they're doing. So there's going to be a lot of stuff to explore and people to talk to. I think throughout the day I'll be kind of blasting some interviews and coverage and, maybe a little bit of how the sausage gets made, walking around, finding people, you know, some exciting stuff and some, okay, I guess I'll watch this as he tries to find somebody to interview. I have a feeling I'm going to talk to a lot of cool people, though. So definitely I'll talk to you from lunch. Awesome. So I'll be on it a little bit.
Looking forward to it.
That's tomorrow. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can hit us up on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
If you like our show, please go to iTunes. Take a second to review it and give us some stars if you think we deserve those stars. It helps other people find our show and subscribe. Subscribe. If you want to be the first one to see our show, subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. We've been doing some new stuff over on our Facebook page, so like us to get the tech news as part of your feed. And you can always express your displeasure via Twitter. I am at Megan Maroney.
And to me, your pleasure. I am at Jason Howell. We'll see who wins. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We will see you tomorrow. Bye, everyone.
Woo!
Pow!